Welcome to Primetime, powered from the Sereno Cigar Company Studios in North Carolina and broadcasting from the Ventura Cigar Company Studio in California. It's episode 67 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, we welcome Willie Herrera from Drew Estate. We will smoke the Underground Dogma. We'll also talk about the legacy of Arsenio Ramos. In our deliberation segment, we'll talk about national cigar launch events. And do they really accomplish what they want to do? And this episode of the Primetime Show is brought to you by Saga Cigars, maker of the Saga Golden Age cigar. The Golden Age cigar takes you back to the classic days of cigar smoking. Through six generations of experience by the Reyes family, the Saga Golden Age delivers a timeless blend that uses the nobility of the tobacco to bring you the perfect balance of power and flavor. It narrates better than words the history of a family's tradition in tobacco, delivering a cigar much like the ones they used to smoke during the times of Hemingway. Saga Golden Age, a full-body, full-flavored Dominican Puro. With tobaccos from one farm, the blend features a Corojo 2006 wrapper and filler from the original Cuban seeds grown in the Dominican Republic. Available in four sizes at an affordable price, the Saga Golden Age is sure to please and take you back on a journey to yesteryear. And by Drew Estate, check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And by Villiger Cigars. Since 1888, Villiger Cigars have been experts in everything tobacco, including offering a wide range of premium cigars for all connoisseurs. Villiger's latest release, La Floridian Clan, is a project that has been 10 years in the making. It's a project that's a true collaboration between Villiger chairman Heinrich Villiger and master blender Jose Martias Maragoto. The cigar delivers a full-flavored experience thanks to the extensive aging of the tobacco. It was Cigar Aficionado's number 10 cigar of the year for 2017. Be sure to ask your retailer for the Floridian Clan, and you can visit Villiger's entire line of premium cigars at www.villigercigars.com. And by Island Lifestyle Importers, who is Tommy Bahama? He is that charismatic gentleman and generous host, effortlessly charming, confident, and accomplished. Always fun to be around. With a classic sense of style, he inspires us. That's why he smokes the highly rated Island Lifestyle cigars. He is a man that realizes that once in a lifetime is not enough. Find these highly rated cigars and Tommy Bahama cigar accessories at your tobacconist nationwide or visit www.islandlifestyleimporters.com. Live the island lifestyle. Welcome, everybody. Episode 67 of the Primetime Show for this Thursday, September 20th, 2018. It's Will Cooper here in the Sereno Cigar Company studios. I'm joined cross-country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis in the Ventura Cigar Company studios.
How you doing tonight, Will?
I'm doing really good. You know, great night for you guys last night. Really enjoyed the premiere of your new podcast, The Formula. Got to tell you, you guys knocked it out of the park last night.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It was fun to do, and the first episode seemed to go well. So we're looking forward to doing more of them.
Yeah, no, and you know, I'm not trying to just blow smoke, so to speak, but what I really liked about it is I think it was the first podcast that got it. Well, you guys set a goal to really talk tobacco and, you know, just break down a cigar, and that's what you guys did on that show, and I got to give you guys a lot of credit on that. You had a really good guest that made it a lot of fun to do that, and he had a lot of knowledge, but you guys were just really kind of keeping the flow going with it. So hats off. It was a great job.
Thank you. Yeah, we kind of saw that there was a gap in kind of the media space to be able to provide something that's a little bit more technical than some of the other shows out there. So we wanted to give it a shot, and I think it went well. And, you know, there's some other people that we'd like to get on the show, including Willie, because he can talk about tobacco pretty well. Really interested to see kind of how the show progresses.
No, and that's great. And you know, that's who we have on tonight. Actually, yeah. our guest tonight, Mr. Willie Herrera, the master blender from Drew Estate. Willie, welcome to Primetime.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Good to be here.
Excited. We've been trying to get this happening for a while. I know but we finally have been able to work it out. So thank you so much.
Finally, man. Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while in the works there, man, but finally made it happen.
That's great. That's great. I mean, I know you've had a pretty busy, you know, you have a pretty busy schedule these days for sure.
Oh, yeah, that's an understatement, but, you know, it's fun. It's exciting, you know, and having fun and having a good time. So I can't complain.
That's great. That's great. So, Willie, we always like to kind of start it off on the show with a question we ask everyone is, how did you get into smoking cigars?
Man, so I started like a lot of people that I hear their stories. You know, I started young, probably about 15, 16, just buying or getting whatever it was I could get my hands on. You know, I would see the older guys smoking, and it was intriguing to me. And you know, I just started at a young age. Like I said, smoking whatever it was I could get my hands on, and it just, you know, the passion grew from there.
Eventually, though, it led you to your family's business, El Titan de Bronze, in Little Havana.
Well, you know, it's funny. So my wife's family started the factory in the 90s, and I always was involved helping them out, but never factory wise. But I was always, you know, a cigar smoker, and I loved what they were doing. I just, you know, I had chosen a different path, and I was doing different things. And it wasn't until, you know, the grandfather had gotten sick, and, you know, they needed a male in the factory for a week to help out or whatnot. So I took a week off of vacation off of my real job, and worked a full week there. And by the end of the week, man, I decided I was quitting my job and starting full time there. And that's pretty much how it happened, you know. And the second question I always get is, you know, how did I get into making cigars or blending cigars? And you know, the facts are that, you know, I had to do it by, you know, I had no choice in the matter if I wanted to, you know, continue to work there. Because when I started full time there, you know, I wasn't a fan of the two cigars that they had. And so what I would do was, you know, buy different cigars that I did enjoy at the shops, and that's what I would smoke there at the factory. And you know, as you could imagine, these older Cubans, you know, they would take it kind of personal that I wasn't smoking, you know, all of their stuff there. And it got to a point where, you know, I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. So I decided to teach myself and how to make a cigar. So I would look at the rollers and sit down in the back and grab tobacco and learn to make a bunch and how to fill mold and, you know, practice it and learn how to put wrapper on the cigar. And once I was able to finally construct a whole cigar that you could smoke, you know, properly, that it wasn't, you know, too packed or too underfilled, I just started playing with all the tobaccos that we had in the factory and just blending different things, you know, see how it would taste, you know, different binders, combining different binders, you know, all the different fillers, and just playing and just making cigars and putting them away and stuff. And because we're in Little Havana, you know, there used to be a lot more factories in Little Havana. You know, you had like Gloria Cubana across the street from our factory, and then you had El Rey de los Habanos, which is my father, right next to them. And so we had a lot of foot traffic and a lot of people coming to visit those factories, and they would see our factory across the street, and they would walk into our place. And you know, I would start talking to the people that would come in, and if it wasn't, you know, the guy or gal looking for a gift for, you know, their brother, their boss, whatever, if it was a person who was an actual smoker, I would run in the back and give him a cigar. And you know, a week or two later, I get a phone call from that person. It turned out to be either a shop manager or a shop owner, and a lot of those cigars became their house cigar, which to this day we still make for those guys, you know. And you know, that's pretty much how it started for me, man.
What were you doing actually? What was your day job before you went to go work that week in the factory?
Banking.
Oh, I would have done the same thing. Hold on. I'm terrible now.
So, what was it during that week that really kind of sucked you in?
Man, just the people that you would deal with day to day. They were never pissed off, you know, they were never complaining about anything. They were always happy. You know, and it was so different, man. It was so different from all the politics in banking and the people pissed off because of a return check or a deposit that it didn't clear. Or, I mean, it was just, you know, it was fun in the beginning. But towards the tail end, for me, it just wasn't fun anymore. And this, you know, was the perfect thing for me, you know.
Now, Sandy's your mother-in-law, Sandy Kobas, who runs the factory. Yeah, yeah. She's an amazing woman, Willie. I mean, every time I go there, she makes me feel like welcome. I can't say enough. I was in there last year. She treated us wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it's about, man. It's all family. Everyone who works there, everyone who walks in there, you know, everybody's treated the same. Everybody's treated as family. You know, and I always tell people, if you don't have at least 45 minutes, don't walk in there, man, because you're gonna be late to wherever you gotta go to after.
During your time there, and I know we're going to get to the Drew Estate stuff, but I have this question. Towards, like I'd say, the later years that you were there, you guys started to take on a lot of clients. Like Sean Williams was one that comes to mind. Ernesto Padilla is another one.
Yep.
Brian Chinook, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, so was that more of a product of, you think, the boutique boom start, like the boutique craze starting to pick up, where you guys really benefited from that? Or was it always kind of a steady stream of people you had in, clients looking for cigars like that?
No, definitely. The whole boutique craze, you know, is what helped us in that segment. We always had a lot of private label stuff that we would do for stores.
Right.
You know, what they call their house cigar. But it was never any other brands. So, yeah, the whole boom of everybody wanting, especially somebody wanting, you know, a cigar from Miami, is what really got people to our factory.
What, one more question I have there is, you said when you started working there, you were smoking other cigars. What kind of, what brands were you smoking before, you know, when you got to El Titan?
Man, I was all over the place, man. And a lot of them I still smoke, you know, but all over the place. You know, I loved and still love a lot of peat stuff. I remember Eric's original stuff when it was made there in Cayocho, Espinosa and Ortega's stuff, which now is, you know, all the stuff they're doing out of La Zona now, it's, you know, it's over the top.
Yep.
But I mean, I was just over... all over the place back then, you know. You know, I started off smoking whatever I could get my hands on, and then started that, like a lot of people, just trying out different things, trying to figure out, you know, what I really liked best. And, you know, there was no one brand that I would smoke exclusively, you know. Now it's gotten a little bit more, I've gotten a little bit more finicky, you know.
Sure. I mean, I could see that, though, you know, as you kind of do your own creations, too. So there's a point in time where you meet Jonathan Drew. Could you tell us that story?
Man, so how I formally meet Jonathan Drew, it's a great story. So we have had a great friend by the name of Gary Arts. A lot of the guys that have been around for a while might remember him.
Yeah, I remember him, yeah.
He was the kind of guy you either liked or you couldn't stand. And, you know, for whatever reason, he really liked me and he really liked Jonathan. So, long story short, Ernesto Padilla was in the process of opening up his factory there in Little Havana. But he hadn't yet opened it up. So... he had some guests coming in, and he calls me up to do him a favor and put some wrapper on some of his cigars. I think it was the 1932s or something, or 68s. I forget. But it was one of those two. So I said, yeah, sure, bring the cigars, bring the wrapper. I did everything for him, but I had a lot of wrapper left over. Now, keep in mind, you know, we had very limited access to a lot of tobaccos. In being in Miami, being as small as we were. So I had all this leftover tobacco. I said, hey, I'm done with all your stuff. I had this tobacco. What are you going to do with it? He goes, no, just, you know, keep it. So I started playing with it and, you know, came up with a really good blend. And I really liked that tobacco. I had never worked with it. I had never seen it before. But the cigar came out really good, which eventually came out, turned into the Redemption Maduro. Well, the wrapper was Mexican San Andreas wrapper. And that was sold to Ernie from Jonathan as a personal favor. And, you know, nobody was supposed to know. And, you know, it was just, you know, just a personal favor. Nobody knows. And, you know, it was hush hush. So long story short, Gary's in Nicaragua on one of the safaris with Jonathan. And he blurts out to John, hey, have you tried the cigar that Willie did with your wrapper? And Jonathan just lost his shit. And, oh, sorry.
You can go ahead.
We're not regular by the FCC.
He went nuts. And Gary was like, oh, my God, I screwed up. So the next week he's back in Miami. He called me up on a Saturday. Hey, what are you doing? I said, no, nothing. Just opened up, whatever. He goes, let's get breakfast. So I meet him at the Latin American there. Not too far from the factory. I'm sitting down, and in comes Jonathan. And that's when, like, I formally meet Jonathan. And, you know, talk to John, say, hey, man, I'm sorry. I didn't know, blah, 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 blah. And to this day, we get the San Andreas from Drew Estate at El Tango. But, yeah, man, that was funny. That was crazy.
Then obviously, you know, you guys got to know each other. How did eventually it become where you were brought to Drew Estate?
Well, apparently he was following a lot of stuff that I was doing. You know, to me, John was this, you know, this untouchable guy. You know, Drew Estate, holding, you know, wow. This is like this massive, never in a thousand years that I ever think, you know, I'd be part of Drew Estate or doing anything with Drew Estate, you know. But he was following a lot of stuff that I was doing for a lot of these other brands and the buzz that they were getting and the buzz that our stuff was getting and the reviews and whatnot. And, man, probably in 2010, just out of the blue, he invites me to dinner. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I call my wife. Hey, can you believe this? Jonathan Drew invited me to dinner, blah, 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 blah. And that's when he first brought the idea. Hey, what do you think about kind of doing what you're doing in Miami, doing it at Drew Estate? You'll have your own team. You'll train them the way your guys make cigars in Miami and kind of bring that traditional Cuban aspect of making cigars into Drew Estate. And that's how, you know, that's how it all started. And that's how Herrera Estelí was born.
So I remember when the Pappy Van Winkle came out, there was, I guess, one of those blends was one of the blends you were working on as you were kind of onboarding to Drew Estate. When you first came in there, were you just working on these test projects, and was it basically a tryout?
No. So that Pap, what ended up being the Pappy tradition, when we, prior to our conversation of, you know, him and inviting me to dinner and, you know, him asking me about, you know, joining Drew Estate, whatever, he had invited me to Nicaragua to see Nicaragua for the first time and to see the factory. He gave me the whole tour. And at the end of the tour, we walk into the blending room. You've been there.
Yep.
Where every one that goes to the safari blends their own cigar. And he sees a look at my face, and I'm like, wow, look at all this stuff. And I'm smelling all this tobacco, and I'm looking at all this tobacco. And he says, man, just have some fun. Blend some cigars. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah. So I blended three different cigars, three different blends. And I brought some home, like 10, I think, of each one back home, and thought nothing else of it. And it wasn't until months later when then the whole dinner thing happens, and he asks me, you know, what I thought about joining Drew Estate and so on and so forth. So those blends got put away. And I find out later that he had been passing out a lot of those blends to the guys in the office. And people are like, oh, wow, yeah, this guy, you know, really does know how to make cigars and blah, 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 and how to blend and this and that and the other. So fast forward to the Pappy tradition, Julian Van Winkle comes to us to create a second cigar for him. So we start working on that project, and we send him a bunch of samples. And one of those samples was one of those three original blends that I had done on that visit, which ended up being the one that he picked. And that's what became the Pappy tradition. So I wasn't a part of Drew Estate, nor did I ever have an
idea you were even going to be.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. How many people worked at El Titan de Bronze when you left there?
We had 4 rollers.
Okay.
And then myself. And then Sandy would come in. And then Carlos, her dad, and Martha, her mom. And that was it.
And then you now go to this, massive, the biggest factory in Nicaragua.
Right.
What was that? Because I've gone back and forth between large and small companies from a 200,000 person company to a 5-person company too. Right. So, but what was it like for you to kind of do that? Did maybe your experience working kind of corporate with banking, did that help a little? I'm just trying to, because I know it's a big adjustment when you go into that. It's not for everybody.
You know, what helped was coming from a mom and pop place and doing everything yourself, from sweeping the floor, from deveining the wrappers every night, staying till 10, 11 o'clock so that your rollers have tobacco for the following day, from banding cigars to make boxes so you could send out a shipment so you could get the money in there by the end of the week so you could pay your rollers. You know, I did it all. I did everything because there was nobody else to do it. So going into Drew Estate, being an outsider in Nicaragua, but treating everybody the same as myself, because that's what I do. That's, you know, that's what I learned. That's how I grew up, you know, they got them to really accept me very quickly, you know, because I would sit down in the middle of the factory floor right next to another roller. I will get up and go get my tobacco just like the other guys. So they would never look at me and say, oh, look at this guy getting the special treatment.
Right.
You know? So what really made the difference was, you know, just being myself like I was in my little factory in Miami, you know, treating the people there the same way I treated my people in the factory.
It's a good way to do it.
Same.
Sure. That's a good way to do it as well. Now, when you got there, you said you had your own team. Now, at the time you got there, I mean, you had Sakata, you had Melillo there. What was your role specifically around the Herrera S3 brands? Was that really kind of why you were brought in at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when I say my team was, I wanted a team that did the bunching the same way as in Miami, the Entubado method, the roleras that knew how to do the triple seam on the and the mounted heads, you know, so not everybody in the factory knew how to do that. You know, we had some employees that we taught and they caught it quickly. And then we had others that had experience from other factories that do, you know, the same style, you know. And that was the team that I had. I had 6 pairs working on the Herrera Estilis.
Okay. So it was still relatively a small team, you know, and a team, you know, that you had there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then it grew. You know, they grew, and you know, they went training more people, and you know, and we still now it's not a small team anymore. You know,
no. Now, 2014 was a big year for a couple of reasons. You become the master blender, and later that year, Swisher acquires the company.
Right.
What was that year kind of like for you? Because that must have been a big year of change, obviously.
Man, it was everything. Nobody knew anything. So I remember I had just landed in Pennsylvania. I was walking into a store when I heard the news, and it just caught me off guard. I was like, what just happened? You know, I mean, it wasn't even 3 years that I had been with Drew. And, you know, or it was just coming up. Was it? It was just coming up on 3 years.
Right.
And I had just signed up. When I initially came on board, I said, okay, I'm going to try this for 3 years and we're going to see what happens. So I was like, man, you know, do I stay here? Do I go back? What's going to happen? Is everything going to change? You know, I mean, it was a lot of emotions going on, you know?
Well, I can imagine that. I can imagine that as well. You know, one thing that I noticed, because I was down in, I've been down a few safaris, as you know, and I remember I was down on a safari with you prior to the Herrera Esteli coming out. Mm-hmm. And then I was, last year I was down there, and Willie, and I've said this kind of on this show, man, that's your factory. I mean, people just, you have a commanding presence now. And I don't mean that in a totalitarian sense. You have a confidence in terms of that factory and every facet of how it operates right now that I saw, and I really saw you grow from that time. It was a beautiful thing to see. I just, that's more of a comment than a question there.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's been great, man. You know, one thing, I never, you know me. I'm a shy guy. I'm not a talkative guy. I don't come up to strangers and just start new conversations or whatnot.
Right.
People that know me know that. Because of that, you know, it takes me a while to get to know people. But the people in the factory were just open arms, you know, and just, I felt so comfortable right from the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
I never felt awkward. I never felt, you know, like an outsider. I mean, it was the smoothest transition, you know. And, you know, I just, it's my second home, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great.
It's my second home. I miss it. I miss it when I'm not there over 2 weeks, man.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah, no, that's good. So, Aaron, before we kind of get into some of the brand stuff, do you have anything in terms of Willie and the role to Drew Estate here you want to hit?
Yeah, kind of when you made the ascension to the master blender role, how did that change in regards to your responsibilities? Like, did it kind of take you away from more of the hands-on and in regards to the entire team itself? Or what were the changes in how that went along?
Man, it allowed me to play with more things, you know.
Okay.
Before, you know, I really didn't have a hand in a lot of the newer stuff or new projects for other, you know, other concepts that we were working on or whatnot. So when they gave me that opportunity, it just opened my doors even more, you know, because prior to that, I was working on projects that were just pretty much, you know, under the Herrera umbrella, you know, the
TMS. Right.
The limited releases, you know, stuff like that. So having that opportunity just opened the doors for me to play with more things and get more creative, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was great.
Did you already have ideas going on that of projects that you thought might not fit under the Herrera SLE umbrella, but you could see, you know, putting them out under other brands and things like that? And then when you got that opportunity, it kind of was already going on, or that was like once that kind of switch was flipped, you were ready to go for starting something fresh?
Well, I saw opportunity in the sense that, you know, I had so many things that I had worked on during that year and a half of working on Herrera Esteli. I had so many other blends that I had done that I loved, but you obviously can't bring them all out in 1 year, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh man, now there's other opportunities for me to either plug in these blends, some of these blends that I've worked on that I really like, or, you know, just work on new things. I always tell people, you know, they ask me how do I go about, you know, blending new stuff. And in reality, it's two ways. You either go into it with a concept that or direction that the company's already told you. Say, hey, we want a Connecticut shade, milder cigar, like the Undercrown shade.
Mm-hmm.
Or we want something right in the middle to complement the Undercrown shade and the Maduro Undercrown. And that's how the Sungrown was born.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just go to town playing with different things and create something different.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of two different paths when going into the blending room, you know, and pulling out different tobaccos and play with different things. I'm always looking to create things to plug gaps in our portfolio. They don't always come out, you know, or they just get put in the vault and, you know, a year goes by, a year and a half. Hey, you know, do you have anything that will work for this? I'm like, oh, yeah, I got the perfect cigar. And then, we, you know, we bring them out, we smoke them, we tweak them if you know, people have, you know, oh, well, we, you know, it's too strong or it's not strong enough or, you know, whatever the case is, we'll tweak it if need be. Or, you know, oh, this is perfect, this is great. And then we have, you know, we have something to plug in there.
Right.
Right. So let's talk a little about Herrera Esteli. Actually, this year, some big changes came to the Herrera Esteli line.
Yeah, excited.
Yeah, so give us a little, I guess, 500-foot view of that one, and then we'll dive a little deeper into some of those.
Man, so the whole Herrera Esteli brand, Norteño, Limited, Miami's, the original Herrera Esteli, it was all over the place, especially for Norteño. Norteño had, you had 10-count boxes, then you had refillable bundles, and then you had, you know, 50-count humidors and 100-count humidor. I mean, it was just all over the place. Same thing with Herrera Esteli. You had trays, you had bundles, you had the boxes, the cab-style boxes. And it was causing a lot of confusion for the consumers and the retailers. So we decided to streamline everything, put everything in the same style box. Everything's 25-count. And everything got, you know, its own color style box. And, you know, I think it's going to really, really help the brand cause less confusion for the consumers when they see it all in the shelf and they know it's all part of one brand family. Plus, it looks beautiful, man. It really does look beautiful.
And Norteño's is going to stay, you're still going to keep the same logo on Norteño, right?
Everything is the same. The only thing that's changing is the packaging.
Right.
Box-wise is going to be different. And the colors, you know, the colors on the bands and stuff.
Now, one of those lines is the Miami line, which is a line that you introduced a couple years ago. How did that project come about?
So every year I would do a limited release. If you remember in 14, I believe it was the Lancero in the Herrera Esteli line. And then after that, I did the Churchill in the Norteño line. So I came back to the Herrera Esteli line and I didn't want to do just another size, I wanted to do something completely different. So I talked to the team, and they agreed to let me blend it with our tobaccos in Miami and Otay in the Bronx and have it made there at Otay in the Bronx. So that was the new limited for the Herrera Esteli. And then, you know, it did so well. And again, to keep everything streamlined, we did a full line of that blend, all coming out of Miami. So the same five sizes that you would get in Norteño and the Herrera Esteli, you're going to get in the Miami now as well.
The original size of that Miami wasn't one of those five sizes. That was the Corona Lager. So is that one kind of just a limited, and it's just going to
That's going to be the Corona.
Okay.
Miami. Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to be the Corona from Miami.
You have a Toro, you have a Robusto, and you have a Lonsdale.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice. And is that more of a limited production given, again, that's a smaller factory?
Not really limited, man. Those are going to be all for Drew Diplomatic counts, the same as some of our other stuff. But, you know, it should be fine. It should be good. Everything should, all that new stuff should be hitting the market in October.
And there's one new blend in there right now. That's the Brazilian Maduro.
And then you got the Herrera Esteli Brazilian Maduro.
Yep. Yeah.
That one will be out in October as well. So a lot of cool stuff coming out in October.
And that's a Modafina you guys are using, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Love that wrapper.
No, it is too. Is that the first time you worked with Modafina, or have you worked with it before?
I've been working with that for a while in all these different blends and stuff that I would work on in the factory. Never for any brands that have come out.
Okay.
I've always been a big fan of that, but it's always been a tobacco that we didn't have a lot of. Plus it's a very expensive wrapper as well.
Yeah.
But we were able to, you know, secure a good amount, And so I was able to play with that and use that.
Now, there's a bunch of other cigars that we've seen under Herrera Esteli over the past few years. Is obviously the TAA one, the Maduro. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of the Limitadas that have been the shop exclusives. Were those a lot of those, more of the shop exclusives, were those a result of all those blends that you came out with and you said, hey, these are really good. Let's try to find a way to release them?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was more the shops, you know, would come to us, you know, for, you know, like, for example, the Barrister one. So mm-hmm. It was the first year of me being with Drew Estate. I have been working on a bunch of different things. So I was doing the New Jersey Cigar Festival for the first time. And David asked me, hey, can you bring something special for the guys? Just something you're working on, something different. So I brought a few bundles of what at the time was called Project M, which turned out to be the Barrister Tien exclusive, the very first one. And, you know, after that, we did the Riverside one. And again, that was a blend that I had worked on. And I had, you know, sitting there in the back burner. And, you know, when the opportunity came up, I figured it would fit perfectly for that project, you know. So, yeah, man, like I said, every time I'm in Nicaragua or I'm with, you know, a safari group, when you guys are blending your stuff, I'm blending a cigar myself that I'm turning in as well. You know, it's fun.
Very nice. You know, I want to mention one other thing. The Florida Sungrown Project. Talk a little about what was it like to kind of be involved in a project like that, which is kind of an innovative. It is an innovative project. You think about, you know, bringing the Florida tobacco back.
Oh yeah, that was special. That was special, man. Being, you know, one of the very first ones to have access to that, and be able to experiment with that and play with that and learn all the different properties of it, and, you know, trying to get it to work, you know, because it's very unique tobacco, and it's you know it's there because of the properties, the flavor profile that it has. So getting that to work with your blends, you know, was very challenging and a lot of fun, man. It was one of the funner projects, you know, only because, again, it was something so new that hadn't been done, so it was a major challenge for me personally, to create something that, you know, that number one, Jeff would really like, you know, and, you know, it was just very gratifying and fun.
Yeah, no, and like I said, I had a chance to smoke, Aaron and I both had a chance to smoke some of those Puritos of that Florida Sungrown. It's actually pretty good Puritos, actually. When you smoke. You know, I know. So I was smoking them at the, we were all enjoying them at the barn smoker actually this year too. They were really good.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's great tobacco, man. It really is. And, it's so unique, you know, that's what I love about it.
You and I were talking before the show and I was mentioning how I felt Underground Sungrown really aged well. The FSG is another one. I had the patience to put some of those away for a while. And again, that one with some age on it, you really see what that cigar could become too.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I have had, that's one of the few ones that I've had, not because I've aged it, but that other friends of mine have given to me that they've aged. And yeah, you're right, man. It ages amazingly.
Yeah, going back to the edition Limitadas, especially the 2014 Herrera Esteli and the 2015 Norteño, those were the number one cigars for me both those consecutive years. What was special about those blends that kind of elevated each of those lines to kind of another level?
Well, the blends were the same.
It was just the ratios for the sizes?
Yeah, the only one that was purposely tweaked a little bit was the Churchill. Mm-hmm. It was the same tobaccos. It was just tweaked a little bit because I did not want that Churchill to be too strong. Because in my head, like, the idea behind the Churchill was, you know, for the golfing guy, the guy out fishing, and I didn't want it to be too powerful for the guy smoking out in the sun. So I kind of tweaked it a little bit, which is why it's so much more, you know, it's a lot smoother than any of the other sizes in the line, mm-hmm. you know. And then the Lancero It's just the proportions, you know, on that size. But it's the same blend, same tobaccos for both of them.
Yeah, because with Lanceros, it's interesting because sometimes when you get to that smaller ring gauge, you have to pull a certain amount of tobacco out, and sometimes you can lose kind of the essence of the blend. But there's those times where it just does it right, where you get the perfect ratio and it really shines. And that's, I think that did that for the SLE.
Yeah, you're right, man. I mean, that's a great, great cigar, man. That I get people asking me about that Lancero pretty much every event that I go to.
Yeah.
It was a special blend, man.
No, and it's the same thing with the Churchill. I think exactly my impressions of the Churchill, how you described it, it kind of just softened it and smoothed it out. And I like Notaño, but I loved what you did with that Churchill, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was the whole concept in my head, you know. I figured the guy that's going to smoke the Churchill is going to be the guy out golfing. It's going to be the guy out, you know, maybe sitting in his tractor cutting his grass or out fishing. You know, they're going to be outside in the sun. You know, so I didn't want it to be too strong, you know. So I tweaked it a little bit.
It was an intriguing size for me from Drew Estate. Yeah. Not that Drew Estate hadn't done Churchills before.
Right.
They're just not known for their Churchills. And then that one comes out, and I'm like, yeah, they could produce a great Churchill, yeah. Yeah.
Nice. We try, man. We try. Yeah.
So, you know, we there was a point where after you took over as Master Blender, you started now, you kind of touched on this, right? You moved over to some of the more traditional brands right now.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little about that. What was that process like in terms of, okay, you were doing your thing for a while, but now you have this body of work that's been built up and now it's under your control.
Right. Well, you know, it's a huge challenge, man. It's a huge challenge, but it's something that's it's a lot of fun. You know, I love the challenge. Anything I've ever done, I've always liked the challenge, and I kind of excel under pressure. So, you know, it might take a little bit longer for me to come up with the thing, only because I'm so hard on myself, and I don't think anything is ever good enough to fall within a particular brand, but it's definitely welcomed, you know. And like I said, it gives me the opportunity to play with more tobaccos, experiment more, and you know, just have a lot of fun, man. You know, I don't see it as work. Every time I'm blending something, it's not stressful. You know, it gets stressful later on when we're trying to purchase enough tobacco and there's problems with that or with the growing season or something or packaging. But the whole blending part for me, it's always fun, you know. It's never stressful, it's never, you know, it's never negative, you know.
I remember when you came out with Undercrown Shade, you had told me, maybe I want to make sure I got this right, was that the first Shade Connecticut Shade cigar you had blended?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember you were, yeah, now I remember because you were,
about that one.
Yeah, exactly. I remember, like, and I was surprised because you think about it, Willie, it turned out to be, you know, we're as cigar guys, we're always concerned about what's new.
Right.
But that Shade has done well. I mean, that's become a nice brand builder for Drew Estate right now, in there.
It definitely has, but, you know, I was nervous about that one because I've never been a big Connecticut guy myself. So to work with a tobacco that I wasn't very familiar with was a little nerve-wracking, but I welcomed the challenge, and I wanted to make the baddest Connecticut I could make, you know? And, you know, it turned out to be exactly what I wanted it because it's not your typical Connecticut. It's anyone who smokes it doesn't think they're smoking a Connecticut if they don't look at the wrapper, you know what I mean? Because it's got body, it's got spice, it's got flavor, it's got, you know, all these things that are very hard to get out of Connecticut's, you know?
No, it's very true. And Drew Estate didn't have a traditional Connecticut regular production for all practical purposes then.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, that was a fun brand, and that was also the very first brand that I did since becoming the Master Blender. That was the very first cigar that I did that didn't fall under the Herrera umbrella, you know.
Then you went to Sungrown, right? And that adds a Sumatra blend. That was what excited me about Sungrown was, Sungrown, I get it, but Drew Estate was not known for traditional hand rolled Sumatra. And here you guys come out with that one too. What were you guys trying? I mean, I heard you say a little bit, you were looking for something in between Shade and in between Maduro.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, you know, again, it's when I look at any new cigar you want to come out with, or if I'm working on, or when I'm not, I should say, I'm working on a new stuff, I'm looking at ways how we could plug gaps. And then so now you had the original Maduro on the crown, which was on the fuller side. Then we had now the Shade, which kind of touched more on the milder side, but we didn't have anything in the middle. So, you know, I went into blending that cigar with that in mind, and to keep with the undercrown profile, if you will, because even the Connecticut, it's not really a mild Connecticut. So I wanted to keep something stronger than that, make something stronger than the Shade, yet, you know, smoother, milder than the Maduro. So it would fit perfectly. And, you know, just started working with different tobaccos. I knew I wanted to use Sumatra. So I went into the blending already knowing that. So I just started using different things that I had access to create something that I felt would fit that category, you know, and make that blend part of that family, you know.
No, that's great. Aaron, I want to turn this piece over. I'll turn this part over to you because I know you
okay.
came with
an idea. Sure.
Yeah.
Then comes the 10th anniversary for the Legal Line.
Right.
And this is a brand that it has its own life to it. There's a huge following to it. It's been, you know, growing for years. And then you get to blend a 10th anniversary for this cigar. Was that a little daunting, kind of taking on this beast and saying, all right, now I need to create this great representation of this line?
Oh, man.
How did you tackle that?
Dude, you know, I was talking about that at the event earlier today. That's, you know, Liga Privada, that's our halo brand, you know? Mm-hmm. So in creating that, you know, it had to be, it couldn't just be good. It had to be wow, you know?
Yeah.
So I was looking at kind of outside the box and experimenting with different things and see what would come out of that. And got some samples of you know, some tobacco from our guy that does our Connecticut broadleaf and our Costa Habano, and just started basically thinking outside the box with that and just using tobaccos that we haven't used in anything, you know, and just putting it in that blend and see what happened. And you know, it took a while. It took well over a year and a half for me personally to say, okay, this is good. This, you know, could fall under that brand. Because again,
right.
you know, anything that you do, people are going to compare it to Liga 10, Liga 9.
Right.
And nothing's ever going to be good enough unless, you know, it's really, really good. And then, you know, and then once they smoke, they'll be, oh, wait, hold on. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it was definitely one of the more challenging, probably the most challenging of any of the projects that I've done. Mm-hmm. You know, the Shade was challenging, but that was more because I wasn't used to. I hadn't really worked with Connecticut Shade.
Right.
But this was more of like, you know, how do you compete with this monster and bring something out for people to say, wait a minute, hold on. This is as good or better. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's up there for everybody, you know, or a lot of people, I should say. And, you know, the Liga is untouchable, you know.
Right.
So you're always going to be competing against that, you know. It's never going to be good enough, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there was no baseline, if you think about it, with those tobacco. I mean, from, there were no real lines out with those, with that Connecticut Corolla and that Connecticut Criollo.
Right.
So you kind of had, you kind of were going in there, you know, trying to figure how you were going to make this work, which that was the part that I found amazing with that.
Yeah, that's why I said I went into that thinking outside the box and say, okay, you know what? I'm going to use this and this and this, and let's see what happens. And, you know, just put it together, let it sit, and, you know, and passed it out to the team. And, you know, everybody's feedback was like, oh, my God, what is this? You know? And that's when I knew. I was like, okay, all right. So it kind of secured what I was thinking when I smoked it, you know, in the factory, you know.
Right.
But yeah, man, that cigar, I'm so excited about that because, you know, it's 10 years, you know, it's an anniversary, and people are going to be putting it up against the best, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm anxious to see what they're going to say.
Yeah.
You know. I'm sure you're going to get the ones, oh, no, this is not even close. But I know how good that cigar is.
Right.
No, I get it. I get it, too.
There's the H99, and I'm guessing that the H stands for your last name. Is that correct?
No, Habano.
No.
Yeah.
What is it? What is the H for?
Habano.
Okay. So was that your opportunity to spin a Liga kind of in your idea?
You know, the T52 has always been my preferred of the two Ligas. For me, the T52 is a little bit sweeter. It's a little bit more balanced for me than the Liga 9. So in working with the Corojo, which has sweet properties, I kind of made that more to my profile. Mm-hmm. You know, that blend for me, it's, you know, it's more like what I really like, you know.
Right. Yeah. That's why I think people are gonna think the H is for your name more than for Habano.
Could be, but let me tell you, it fits right in with the Liga family because it is strong, it is powerful. You still get that spice that people are accustomed to from both lines, the 52 and the number 9. It's just a little bit more refined, you know, refined more to my palate,
right.
You know. But I could see how people say, oh, man, this age thing, yeah. But that's not what it's intended for.
All right.
Habano, what the H stands for.
Yeah, but with this brand, people like to put things on it and put it on a pedestal. So if it works out, you got to take credit for the H, man.
It's all good, man.
Exactly. These are pretty limited cigars, at least this time around, right? Is that just because of the yields of the tobacco?
Extremely, man. No. Well, no. The problem is that it was something new that was being done, and we had limited samples. And by the time I finally nailed something that I really liked using these tobaccos, the growing season had passed.
Ah.
So we missed our opportunity for, you know, for us to tell them, okay, yeah, we like it, you know, go ahead and plant it for us, you know. Mm. So we missed an opportunity, but we were able to get our hands on a little bit more that he still had. And that is going to be a very small run that's going to come out later on this year, but very, very small. And then after that, it's pretty much, you know, non-existent for at least a year and a half to 2 years that we get the tobacco ready.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But the plans are both the 10th anniversary and the H99, and there'll be ongoing limited production?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
for
good. Sure.
And, you know, we're going to trickle it out little by little so that everybody gets it. They're not going to get, you know, big amounts, but we are going to trickle it out little by little. So, you know, the year and a half or 2 years that it takes to get the tobacco ready won't be as painful, you know. Mm-hmm. They'll be out there.
Have you, Aaron, anything on the 10th anniversary of H99?
No, go ahead.
Okay. You also had your hand on some other Ligas. I mean, and on the T52s, number 9s, there's some new sizes that came out this year as well. And well, you went, yeah.
Those aren't any new blends. Those are just new sizes.
Okay.
So they're just, you know, tweaked for the format.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not like those are any different from the blends wise, you know, the tobacco wise. They were tweaked for those formats. You know what I mean?
Right. But you had to get them to work in those formats still.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Yes. That part, yeah.
Have you had, in terms of some other Liga Privada projects, have you done anything else with Liga Privada in terms of any Unicos have you come out with?
No. Everything has been stuff that we've had. And, you know, we've just been bringing them out. But it's as far as anything new, not we haven't really worked on anything new as far as new blends, at least that we've released yet. You know, like I said, there's a lot of stuff that I've worked on that might find a home there later on. And that might be a new Unicos that'll come out later on. Because, you know, the whole idea with the Unicos line is everyone is individual. It's its own unique blend. So it is very possible that some of these blends that are stored away could find their home in one of the Unicos. Anything's possible.
There you go.
You know.
Are you involved at all with the fire cured projects as well? The Kentucky Fire?
No, I wasn't the master blend at that time yet.
Okay.
You know, that was stuff that was already being worked on prior to me taking the role.
Okay.
You know.
Interesting. I mean, if you the Candelas weren't you either?
No. All that stuff. I played a role, but not really in the blending part of it.
You know, right.
The guts are pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Just have the candela, which adds that other dimension to it.
But it was very unique, that cigar.
Yeah, very.
Yep.
Very. And then you got the sweets, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I like this. I actually like the sweets.
Same here.
Yeah, I did like it. I thought that little sweet tip really kind of softened it a little getting into it.
It calmed down that smokiness.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, at least, it made it a lot more enjoyable.
That's true. Aaron, I know you got a couple more questions here.
Yeah, I actually do. So, Willie, I'm assuming from your kind of progression in growing and becoming a master blender at Drew Estate, and maybe even before that you came on to Drew Estate, have there been offers from other companies to try to get you your services over to their brands and things like that?
No.
No?
Nope.
Okay.
Nothing.
Interesting. I would think that you'd be a hot commodity, and people would be clamoring to have your blending skills.
Yeah,
using their tobacco or things like that.
Not one.
All right. Well, there's an opportunity for everybody who's watching. Give Willie some offers.
No, John's gonna be calling me up and blame me.
He's not leaving. He's not leaving.
Started some fires here, man.
I'm the one that stirs the pot on the show, so
yeah, Aaron,
I got to do it.
Keep it exciting. Keep it exciting.
Yeah,
that's right. I think this last one is yours, Will.
I don't know. Is this?
I didn't put it in there.
I didn't put it in there either.
Okay.
Willie, do you make flan at all? Are you known for your flan?
Man, I'm the flan king, bro.
I guess I put it in there.
You had to put it in there. Okay. I didn't know that.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let me know next time you're in Miami.
We're going to be there in November.
Yeah.
November
what?
First weekend in November. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hold on. What weekend in November?
The first one.
Yeah.
First, second, third, and fourth.
You get in on the first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. What time on the first you get in?
I get in like 8:30 in the morning.
Oh, perfect. All right, so let's meet up around noon, around lunchtime at the El Titan.
Okay.
There you go.
And I'll have flan there.
Sounds great.
That sounds like a plan.
Perfect. All right, yeah, we'll make that work. And then I fly out to Louisiana for the Barn Smoker.
Okay.
That's on the 3rd.
Yep.
All right, perfect, done. That Thursday the 1st.
So do we need to experience it, or can you tell us what's so special about this flan?
Just, you're going to eat it, man. You're going to taste it. And then you come up with your own, man.
All right.
There we go. All right.
This down as we speak on the calendar here, because if not, I will forget. Done. November 1st, Flung with Coop. All right, done. Experience it.
All right. Awesome. So what we'll do is, Aaron, anything else you want to hit?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, we're going to get into what we're smoking, Willie, real quick. And what we're smoking is sponsored by Tobacco Haven, located in Brookline, New Hampshire. Tobacco Haven is home to New England's largest walk-in box, walk-in humidor. With brands such as Rocky Patel, Casada, Tatuaje, and Latelier, Tobacco Haven has your cigar needs covered. It's also the exclusive home to the Casa Fernandez Tobacco Haven 30th Anniversary Corojo and Connecticut Cigars. You can visit them on the web at www.tobaccohavennh.com. Primetime listeners can use the code COOP10, that's COOP10, and save 10% on your order. So we are both smoking tonight the Underground Dogma, the original Dojo cigar that was re-released this year at IPCPR, the box press, the trunk press of the Underground.
Yes.
Yep. An sent us these. Thank you to An. Mm-hmm. Aaron, let's start with you.
Sure. So this is, I really liked the cigar when it was first released. I thought it was a fantastic cigar. But smoking it tonight, it's really the first time I've smoked it again since then. And it's a cigar that really kind of builds as it goes along. It kind of starts with some light wood and some light pepper and things like that. But then as it goes along, the wood gets a little heavier, it gets a little darker. The spice kind of mellows out. A little bit of cream comes in, a little bit of coffee and things like that. And the retrohale kind of almost provides like a heavier version of the profile, which is interesting because usually the retrohale is kind of, you know, maybe a little more subtle than what you get from, you know, in the mouth flavors. But this is kind of a little bit of a flip side of that. So it's a really good, it's a really good cigar now, you know, on the second visit of it after all these years. So it's, I think it's fantastic.
Nice. Well, you know, we kept everything the same, you know, it was great when it originally came out. So there was no need to change anything. And, you know, we were really excited and the guys out there were really excited to have access to them again. You know, yeah. You don't see much of them at the shops anymore because I guess the word is getting out, you know, but yeah, it's a great smoke, man. It's a great smoke that shape really
the trunk press, yeah.
Blend, you know.
Yeah.
I agree with Aaron on it. I get a little bit of a dark fruit note in the background, also give it a little sweetness. But I'm in agreement with most of the other stuff that Aaron said on that. The one comment I'll make on this is, you know, this is kind of along the lines we were talking before the show in terms of what ages better. What should you smoke now versus maybe what you want to age? I think I did have some of the aged Underground Dogmas. They're good. They're much better if you smoke them now, though. That was just my opinion. So you can get these and enjoy them now. I think that was my opinion. You get some of the maximum flavor. They'll lose a little bit of the strength and body. We had some that were aged for, I think, 4 years when we were down at the factory. They lose a little bit of the strength and body. So, and I kind of liked a little more of that strength and body with it. But, get them and smoke them now is what I would say because they're going to smoke terrific. Yeah.
I agree.
Yep.
You know, I always tell people, man, once we put a cigar in the market, it's because it's ready to smoke.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Get them and enjoy them.
They're
out there for a reason. If we wanted for people to smoke them 2 years later, we would age it for 2 years. And then, right. You know, that drives me crazy. You know, people that just sit on.
I'll probably drive you crazy because I'm in that boat. I don't want to smoke it. I don't want to crack the box open because it's going to be cracked open. I'm like, my wife thinks I'm nuts.
Smoke on the spot.
She's like, you're buying another box of those cigars, but that box, I know you haven't opened that other box that you have in there, the same cigar. And I'm like, yeah. Now that I got the other box, I can open that one. All right, Willie, we're going to do a couple more segments. I know you said you had to go. You're welcome to stay as well, but I know you have an early flight tomorrow.
Yeah. Early flight back home, spend the day home, and then off to Nicaragua the following day.
All right. Well, Willie, we thank you so much for coming on the show. We definitely look forward to seeing you in Miami for sure and catching up on all the great. I mean, Drew State's had a great year, and I'm sure 2019 is going to be as exciting as well.
Oh, I'm excited, man, and I'm excited to see you guys in Miami, get you guys to try my my famous flan and get your opinions as to what you think about that. And we'll have a good time, man. We'll have a good time. Thank you for having me on the show. And I could say hello to somebody.
Absolutely.
I could say what's up to my boy Hector. Mr. Hector Alfonso, I know you're listening, bro.
You better be watching. He's been quiet.
I'm sure we're going to get a text asking us to bring some fun to Hector.
He's better. He's going to come.
I told him out on Monday. He was supposed to come over for a Monday night game, but I was I didn't know. I was leaving the following day. Yeah. I thought it was the day after, and I had to cancel him. So we'll hook up 2 weeks from now, bro, because I won't be home this week.
Willie, did you smoke his new the Seis Provincias?
Man, let me tell you.
He did. He knocked it out of the park with that one.
Yeah. That one and many, many other ones, man.
Yeah.
He's got a palate, and I'm lucky enough for him to always bring stuff home to my house when he's working on stuff. And he knows it. I tell people, he's amazing, man. He's got an amazing palate, and all the stuff he always brings, I love it. I always do, you know, and I give him my unbiased opinion. Sometimes, very rare, I tell him, it's not for me. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, 99% of the time, it's good, real good.
Yep. No, that's great.
All right, guys.
All right, Willie. Thank you, Willie. Great night. Thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
See you soon, brother.
All right. That's Willie Herrera, the master blender of Drew Estate. Before we get into our next segment, we will take a word from our sponsors. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden ages of Cuba, it was the leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Hamastron Valley of Honduras, Julio Araroa took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds, and in 2000, he reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the Odoa Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products to the market with authentic Corojo. Now with Gary Tobacco, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing the authentic Corojo leaf. Tadascan offers a mild to medium cigar in both Connecticut and Habano wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is a 100% authentic Corojo or Maduro. Representing the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer, be sure to ask for Gary Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every draw. By Cornelius and Anthony, if you're going to be wanted for something great. That's what Cornelius Bailey set out to do 5 generations ago, and that's what Stephen Bailey is doing with Cornelius and Anthony Cigars. Using the finest tobaccos, Cornelius and Anthony brings to you the Daddy Mac, Venganza, Meridian, Cornelius, Ariel, Senior E-Sugars, and the recently released Gentle Mistress. You can find them at your local tobacconist. And by Hoya de Nicaragua, celebrating 50 years in the tobacco business, making cigars from their homeland of Nicaragua. And we're going to get into our Debonair Ideal segment, sponsored by Debonair House, makers of the Debonair Ultra Premium Cigars and Indian Motorcycle Ultra Premium Cigars. So, Aaron, I know we were going to, in terms of this segment, we're going to talk a little about Arsenio Ramos and more of his legacy. You and I didn't know Arsenio. So we're not going to sit here. I do have one Arsenio story. I think I've told it a couple of times, but so I did meet him once, actually twice I met him, but for the most part, we really didn't know. But I think for the most part, this was, first of all, it was very surreal that we found out he passed away on Saturday, because we just had Terrence on the show 2 days ago.
Yep.
I didn't ask Terrence if anything was going on, other than I did find out he had passed away, and I pinged Terrence right away, who did confirm it immediately to me. Mm-hmm. But it's a big loss nonetheless for, I think, the industry right now.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, someone with great tobacco knowledge and a long history, and I'm sure he touched a lot of people in regards to just being a friend, but also in the business itself. So, you know, I think he definitely had a far reach in the industry.
Yeah, I think I've told the story when I met him. It was at the Casa Fernandez booth, and I'm talking to Paul Palmer. And you know how you walk into these booths and you got to put your bag somewhere, right?
Right.
Normally I take my bag and I put it into a corner, right? Mm-hmm. But I actually left the bag in front of like one of the coffee tables in front of the couch. And I opened the bag and I had my cigar bag out there, right? And then over comes this gentleman who starts like going through my bag, and he's looking to see what I have in there. And I'm like, oh man. So I go, Paul Palmer sees me like bolt over there, right? And he just starts laughing. I didn't know why he's laughing. I'm like, what are you doing? And he looks up at me, and he had a little bit of a bewildered look, and then it's Arsenio Ramos.
Right.
And I look at him, I'm like, sir, take whatever you want out of that. So Paul comes over. We had a pretty good chuckle on it afterwards. He just thought someone had left these cigars here. And he didn't know what they were. He didn't realize it was my bag. So it was kind of like my butt. But he was very he had a really good sense of humor on that too. because if you lose your show, I mean, Surgeon talked about it. If you lose your show samples, it's tough sometimes. You know, it's not like you can go back and ask for them all again. You know, so,
right?
So, yeah. But you know. What, you know, in terms of what are some of the, like, I mean, I know you smoked a lot of Agonarsa, and you know, Arsenio's had his footprint on a lot of blends. What are some of the ones that you've kind of enjoyed that you most likely could say? I mean, he has footprint probably on most of the stuff from what I heard there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a big fan of all the Anniversarios. I mean, that's just a nice line that the company offers, and I think I've enjoyed every one of them I've smoked. I don't think there's one that I've said that, you know, this is a clunker or anything like that. So I would say that probably is the main area where I would focus and say, you know, this is where I would gravitate towards if I was going to be smoking something that, you know, he had worked on or something like that. But I mean, you know, he's got to have his hands in a lot of these projects, even for the companies that, you know, work with the Agonarsa tobacco that are not, you know, Agonarsa brands. So, you know, Illusione, Warped, all that kind of stuff. I'm assuming he's got to have, you know, some input or, you know, some teaching to some of those guys in regards to like what would work and stuff with those tobaccos.
I believe maybe even Terrence said it last week, but I definitely heard that. No, he wasn't the guy who maybe rolled every cigar and blended everyone, but at a minimum, from what it sounded like, is everyone would want Arsenio's blessing.
Mm-hmm.
On the blend, you know, and I think that was the one thing they all sought out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there was a lot of small brands that were out there, you know, that, you know, you think about are, you know, these brands may not even be out there today if it wasn't for an Arsenio Ramos and what he was able to do down there.
Yeah, you think of like a brand like Jeremy Jack or something like that, you know, very much an Agonarsa product. I would assume, and you're going to be talking to Brady in a few weeks, but, you know, I would think that, you know, he'll be able to tell you a little bit more about that, but I would assume that he would have had some input there as well.
Yeah. It sounded like Rainier Lorenzo too. Because he was the one, he posted something right after I had gotten the message that he passed away. And literally I got the message from like three people, then I saw a picture come out and Rainier posted a picture.
Mm-hmm.
But even guys like Nick Malolo, you know, they revered this guy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, big impact.
Big impact. Do you think how do you think Agonarsa now goes? I mean, what do you think? Do we see changes with them? What do you think? Where do you think they head from here?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think, you know, Max Fernandez's progression within the company was to really be digging deep into that blending process. So I would assume that that's kind of where they go first to see if that's going to be, you know, how the company is able to still anchor itself in-house. But, you know, time will tell in regards to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Max is definitely on a progression. And if we didn't have him on with Terrence, but on the last episode, one thing that I really got out of that episode is you could see Max is a guest that you can put on the formula.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's got a lot, and not everyone can go on the formula is what I'm getting at. So Max has got he doesn't have six decades like Arsenio does, you know, he's definitely, I think he'll do fine there. I think they'll be fine. They obviously have lost some knowledge, but I think you know, they'll all, you know, they have a strong team there, so they'll rise to the occasion.
Right. Yep. Definitely.
Yeah. It I was a little surprised about one thing. I didn't see any coverage out of Cigar Aficionado with him passing.
I just got an email from them today, and there was a footnote in the email about his passing, but I don't know that there's any kind of formal article or anything like that from
them. Unless something went up like later today. I hadn't checked since later today, but I was still, like I said, I would have considered him a big enough name where when the story broke, at least by Monday I would have seen something out there. Like I said, it just very, that surprised me. They've done a lot of coverage for Agonarsa. You know, I know that they, and I just kind of perused the website, didn't see anything, but Yeah, you're right. They sent out that email on that as well. The other cigar I'll just mention, I don't know if you've smoked it, but Seth and I are very high on it. It's the Oro. Yeah, the Arsenio Oro. It's a really good cigar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one they did for his 80th birthday.
Okay.
Yeah. That was for his 80th birthday. So I think definite loss as far as you know, the industry goes. It was definitely, you know, it's been kind of a tough year for the industry this year. There's several people have passed away. It just seems like, you know, the Eric Hansons, Jan Wasgeners. So it's been a tougher year this year.
Yeah.
Even the Havana Phils and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right.
So that, our condolences to the Ramos families as well as to everyone at Aganor Salif there right now. All right. Why don't we move? We'll do some commercial break. We can move right into deliberation here.
Sure.
All right. And with Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blenders set out to create Puro Son Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saka's closely held values and a test in three simple words: everything Saka wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion of Saka; they're a way of life. As for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sober Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, Muestra de Saka, and the recently released Todos los Dias at your local tobacconist. And by M-Bombay Cigars. M-Bombay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. M-Bombay Cigars are enrolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving it a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try M-Bombay and the Gaia line. M-Bombay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And by Tailored Smoke. Located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter, Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored cigar experience. And by Caldwell Cigar Company. Caldwell Cigar Company launched in 2014 with a very simple mantra: create, innovate, ambition. Since day one, they have done things differently. They have challenged the industry norms to produce sticks that time and time again deliver on their promise. Look for Caldwell products or any number of their collaborations at your local retailer today. So, you know, my wife's actually out of town this week. She actually is visiting some friends up in Cleveland. She's not going to the football game tonight, just so you know that. So that ain't ever happening. But it's just me and two of my sons here. So we are on, let's put it like this, it's like meat city here.
Right.
We ordered pizzas tonight, and I basically delegated to my oldest son, just get the pizzas and get the Brooklyn style crust that I like from the place.
Right.
He comes back with the Fred Rui pizza, the bacon pizza.
Right.
Not a bacon pizza is not something you want to have with the Cattle Baron cigars. I tell people, or any type of cigar. And I had it before the show here, right? So I'm smoking this Dogma, but I did smoke a Dogma last night when I watched your show.
Right.
So lucky I had that, and that's why I usually, if possible, try to smoke the cigar the night before, just in case with that, because, bacon pizza it's good, but it will fry your palate. It's all it's so much salt in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I got Diet Coke to quench my thirst, June. Just so you know that.
Yeah.
So they're like, can we go? Like my boy's like, can we go out to like Fleming Steakhouse? I'm like, no. Can you pay him for it?
Right.
That didn't happen.
Yep. You take him to Applebee's.
We're gonna go to. There's a really good wing place. We're gonna get wings and stuff for Sunday. As you can see, the only thing I'll do is grill. I'm not like really. My wife won't even let me in the kitchen with that. So it's gonna be like eat out every night here.
Yeah.
And then we eat in front. Like it's a little different. Like we don't set a table. We just eat in front of the coffee table.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, so it used to like my daughter like 1 year she came here and like. Like back from college, my wife does this trip every year up to Ohio to see some friends. And so she's always, like last year when she was doing this trip, we did the show with Ryan from Island Labs. He was in the studio last year.
Right.
So it was like the same deal. But sometimes my daughter will come back and she'll like bring, like take care of us basically.
Yeah.
So. All right. So I got to admit, I wanted to do this topic for a long time and then Saka beat me to it with a question of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to say, I'll admit when he brought this topic up, It reminded me to do it. We were thinking of doing it last week, but then there was other stuff that happened with like Fred Rui and stuff. So,
right.
So we're gonna do it this week. And the question is on the whole concept of the National Cigar Launch Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what in Steve's case, Steve, someone actually emailed him saying, "Are you gonna do a National Cigar Launch Party?" Right. He was kind of intrigued by the idea, but he wasn't really planning on doing one.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of these. I mean, we've seen tons of these over the years, right?
Right.
I'll ask you a few questions here on this one. What truly is a national cigar launch in your opinion?
I would say it's the initial release of the cigar. So, like, the cigar's not really available anywhere else except for at this location or through this source on this day. And that I would consider that to be kind of a national launch where, you know, people are able to, you know, you could, if they have an online presence, you can order it online or you can call into the store and order it or something like that. So it's not just limited to people that are going to be able to attend the event. Because otherwise, it's not national. It's more of a local launch kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I would say, too. I know, for example, Cigar Dave used to do every year an event in Charlotte. And he stopped doing it about 3 years ago. And every year, there would be a quote-unquote national launch.
Mm.
And I'd say in a lot of, not all the cases, but a lot of the cases, it wasn't that what you just described, and they were just calling it a national launch when the cigar was already out for months, like
right.
2 or 3 months, and they were just showcasing it as that. And in my opinion, that is not a national launch by any.
Right.
You may be putting it on a bigger stage where people come out of town, like you said, to it,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a national launch there.
Yeah.
A guy who really did a good job with his national launches with like real localized with shop exclusives is Abe down at Smoke Inn.
Mm-hmm.
Typically with all those micro blends, he would bring in the names behind it. So I went, the way I met Abe for the first time was I was in Palm Beach the weekend he was launching the Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And he had people come all over the place for that event. Because that's when Tatawahe was people. That's when you know, and I'm not. Pete still got a big following. But the Tatawahe, those are people who get the car from Tennessee and drive down,
right?
For the thing. So I happened to be in Palm Beach that, and it was a party. It was a huge party right now.
Right. Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm going with the next thing with that is, I don't think if you're gonna set the table up with a tablecloth and put boxes out, that's not a national cigar launch.
Right.
Just because you're the first place to have it, that's not enough. I think you got to do a little more, especially if you're trying to make it quote unquote national.
Right. I would agree with you on that.
Yeah. So here's the question I have, and this was Saka, is should a company do this? Or shouldn't they do it?
I think it depends on the company. I would say maybe for a smaller company, it would make more sense. But for a larger company, I don't know that it makes that much sense unless there's some sort of like an exclusivity for a particular retailer or, you know, large retailer that has multiple locations kind of a thing.
So what about Steve Socker? Does he need to do a national launch?
I don't think he needs to do something like that. You know, he is a smaller company, but I think he's got enough of a following that it's not a critical event.
Yeah, I think like he's putting, you know, obviously Sin Compromiso is rolling out right now, mm. and he's got people trying to get it, and he doesn't have any, is mm. what he says. So that's telling me I don't think you need to do that.
Right.
Let's take a bigger company. Let's take Drew Estate, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just take that 10th anniversary cigar.
Right.
Do they need to do a national launch with that?
No, I mean, everybody's clamoring for it. Like, they're ready, biting for it. So, I mean, I guess if you want to make it where it's, like, you know, exclusive and you want to make it where you're trying to pull more of a draw or something like that, maybe if you tie it in with, like, a barn smoker or something like that, you could do it that way. But otherwise, I don't think so.
Yeah, they did that with the FSG a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. They launched the FSG, the Barn Smoker, which I thought was a brilliant idea. But yeah, I don't think they need to do it either. So here's the question I have. What manufacturer would you say is someone that they're coming out with a cigar and they need to have a national launch party?
I mean, I think that take the Cabarcano guys. I think that's a perfect example. Like they've really gotten that kind of nailed down. Like they've done a lot with like in the famous shops and things like that, where they've done that kind of a thing. And they have a big following where they get a lot of people at the event, but the cigar is also available, you know, online for purchase and things like that to be able to do that. So, you know, maybe for those, you know, smaller brands like that, that, you know, have more of a presence on like the East Coast type of thing, that they need to be able to kind of somehow get, you know, accessibility for that to people in the Midwest and the West Coast, then that would be beneficial to them.
But here, yeah. So, you know, I think there's a couple cases. Like, I think when what I've noticed is they've done, they do kind of a local launch. They've taken a little bit of a different approach. So they do a local launch. Like when they come out with their big releases in, every May, right?
Right.
So they have Berkeley Humidor, which is their store. Mm-hmm. And what do? They go and they basically have a party there and they do a pre-sale and they sell a lot and then they put some online.
Right.
And then they've done the shop exclusives for Famous, right? Mm-hmm. And they've killed it as well there.
Yeah.
So, you know, from that perspective, I think they've done it as well. And I think they're getting to a point where they may soon enough have a point where they, as these events kind of get more social media exposure, they may start getting people coming in from out of town for these.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they sold out of the Corona Gordas though.
Okay.
But I also think that was a much bigger allocation Famous got than the Canines that they did.
I would think so too. Yeah, and that's probably the reason. It's just a bigger batch that, you know, they had it ready for, you know, they were not going to sell out. Yeah. They wanted people to be able to access it when they wanted to buy it. So
yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you look at Dojo, he's been a guy who, again, from a local, I mean, he's been having these events and he's been selling out quite a bit of those cigars. Mm-hmm. in combination with the festival and the online sale as well.
Yep. Exactly.
How about like a company like you go to? How about like you look at? Here's one that I think is interesting though. So AJ Fernandez did a national launch of the Ramon Ayones,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of did a high. They went into New York City. They went to, I want to say it was Club Macanudo or the Grand Havana Room. It was one of those two, and they had a invitation only thing.
Right.
And they got, and I'm sure that Cigar Aficionado and Rob Report were. I didn't get my invite, by the way. You say no, right. But no, I'm kidding around. But seriously, they have. I think there's a case where it's a little different that they're doing an invitation only. They're inviting stakeholders. Maybe they're not looking to sell a lot of cigars that night, mm-hmm. but they're looking to really get some exposure on this particular launch here, and you do it that way.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I can see that. I mean, it's a well-known brand. It's kind of getting a new face to it. So doing something like that with a big name like AG, I can understand that.
Mm-hmm. Have you know, so we kind of, I mean, as far as impact goes, do you think there's a difference of, do you think there's, take Cabarcano out of the equation.
Right.
Do you think there's an impact of having a national launch where the brand's going to immediately do better with that?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I don't, but except maybe in this case where if you can get some, you get some exposure with this, you know, people seeing you had this event, you brought AJ in, he's bringing back this. I could see it working in that case,
mm-hmm.
where maybe that makes sense. That being said, there is another angle to look at this though. And maybe we hit this question a little next week on the show. We'll talk about next week's show in a minute. But the retailer, on the other hand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the retailer could be looking at this very differently. Because I think it was a retailer who asked Soccer about the national launch.
Right.
I could see now the retailer coming in there and saying, I want to be the first one to have that cigar.
Oh, absolutely.
So now there's this other angle where if someone wants to do it, maybe you say you get the National Cigar, but you got to launch, but you got to do, you know, put in a bigger order.
Right.
And, you know, something like that where, and then it's on you to promote that event right now. So I think the retailers can definitely benefit from that a lot.
Yeah, it definitely depends on the brand and the personality as well. But I could definitely see where the retailer would see a huge reason why they'd want to have it there, because, you know, they're probably going to sell a lot more, especially if the face or somebody that represents the brand is going to be there. It draws a lot of people to the location. So I could see where it definitely makes sense for a retailer if they can get that exclusivity, they would see a big benefit to it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with it. But it's kind of ironic. I've not seen a lot of retailers. Again, I'll take some of these special things like the Apocalypse and the Cabrera King out of it. I have seen very few retailers be able to promote it at a national level.
Right.
It's more like the first to launch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's not, and that's not a knock on, and I'd be curious to get Dave Garofalo's opinion on that one. I notice he doesn't do national launches for the most part.
Right.
I notice I think with Dave Garofalo, he's got a base in his stores that he knows when he brings something in, he knows his customers, they're going to come in and buy it. And then he's got enough now of notoriety nationwide and an online store where people can access that. And I think we've seen why he's been successful at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He does that. I got to ask now, it sounded like he did that anniversary party, right? Last week.
Yep.
It didn't sound like it was a selling event though, which I thought was interesting. I think it was just really a dinner he had and he brought people in for that.
Yeah. I don't think it's ever a selling event.
Yeah.
It's really just, a local event. Yeah. People do fly in for it though.
Yeah.
Lots of brand owners and representatives are there. And there's, I think it's an opportunity for people to kind of meet those personalities that go along with those brands.
Yeah. And I think, one I know he did a launch of, and I know several of the retailers in New England did this launch, was the Big Poppy, mm-hmm. The David Ortiz. I don't want to say that got people to fly in from like California to go.
Right.
But I think they got people from all over New England to try to go to these events, because some of them went to multiples and there were people who maybe drove from Connecticut up to New Hampshire and things like that.
Right.
That we saw. So I think sometimes if you bring in some star power, mm-hmm. It works. But I could tell you even when Victor Vital had Armand DeSante, he didn't do a national launch. He did events with him. It still didn't draw people to get on, right. Get in the car and drive 5 hours, maybe a couple, but definitely there weren't people who got on a plane to go to a cigar event.
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe there's so many of these cigar events right now that's why people aren't going to go to, like people aren't really going to go to these national launches anymore?
Well, I mean, I think people are, people are definitely want to get their bang for the buck.
Right.
So, going to an event that's a single brand kind of thing, they're not, I don't think they see the value in spending for a flight and a hotel and all that kind of stuff. They'd rather go to something like Rocky Mountain Cigar Festival, Big Smoke, something like that, where they're going to get access to a lot of different brands in one trip.
And that's why I thought what Dojo did this year at Rocky Mountain Cigar Fest was brilliant. He brought out that cigar. I'm losing track of his cigars, but it was the Espinosa one, right? it was the Feng Chung.
Feng Shui.
Yeah, sorry. Ramen noodles. Only Dojo has a pack of cigars that looks like ramen noodles. Sorry, Eric. I love the packaging, but I think that cigar would have sold out no matter what, because I think he's got, there's a buying audience he's got, obviously, right. And Espinosa has that too. But I think it made the Rocky Mountain Cigar Festival that much more. Hey, I'm coming, because you're going there, you're making a weekend of it. So now you have this thing you can go to. On top of that, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I just think that there's you get a lot more out of it doing something like that. Unless you're just like a super fanboy of the brand, then it makes sense to make a trip for that. But otherwise, you want something where you're going to be, you know, getting a lot more access to different stuff.
You know, I went to the Great Smoke, Abe's event, and he doesn't do it as he still does it. He does what he was doing for some of the micro blends. This separate from the Apocalypse, which was not part of the Great Smoke, but I remember Big Delicious. He did a VIP dinner. He would have this VIP dinner, and it was a really nice dinner you got. It was a great steak dinner you got. And Booth was there, and he brought the Big Deliciouses there. The one thing I didn't know about was the steakhouse he had it in was a very interesting steakhouse. It was a steakhouse that afterwards, you know, basically they
bring out the poles and
they bring out the pole. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So yes, that was interesting. Seeing Matt Booth with that. So yeah, it was, if I'm a little uncomfortable talking, it wasn't really my thing to be honest with you, but, yes, but so I've been this, but yeah, by then the event was over. Let's put like the other event began.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I mean, I thought it was an interesting topic to say the least, with that. I think, I think sometimes, I think the event market's a little saturated right now.
Yeah.
To begin with, where now that these guys, it seemed like it used to be, Aaron, like, and you may see this still in California, because I don't think you have as many events as we have in the East, but it used to be like, I go back 7-8 years ago, and you know, Stace Berkland, right?
Right.
We'd get in a car and we'd go to Atlanta, we'd go to Chattanooga, we'd go to Raleigh, because not all the events were coming through town, right? Not all these people would, and you didn't know in the next chance you'd see these people. So yeah, it was pretty good. We made an overnight trip, weekend guys trip, right? Now you don't really need to do that because everyone comes. It seems like everyone makes the rounds through town. I think Charlotte also now having the hub airport, it contributes to that a little, but it doesn't seem we need to do that anymore because these people are so accessible locally now here.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a ton of actual like in-store events either, so it's still sparse. So I would make the trip down to Paso Robles for Crush and Roll, which
but that was a lot of people there at one time. That was more of a hurry.
Yeah. So it was like a 2.5 hour drive, and it's a whole weekend type thing. So you just kind of go down there and get to hang out with people and things like that. So that was, and we don't really have any more of those events like that, because that shut down about 2 or 3 years ago. So, every once in a while, I'll go up to Napa Cigars and, they starting to have a little bit more events there and things like that. And so I'll head up there when I have an opportunity. But, every once in a while, someone will pop into a shop. But otherwise, we don't get a lot of those events here now.
Yeah, no, it seems like that's the case. I'm hearing more and more, because a lot of the HERFs have been, like Light of Charlotte was ours, and that's been gone for 4 years. There's talk about someone bringing it back maybe next year. But yeah, I mean, a lot of them have come and gone too.
Yeah.
Abe's event, the Great Smoke, he'll probably admit it's not as big as Rocky Mountain, but it's probably the next biggest one, I would say. Okay. And he makes it a 5-day event now. He's got stuff from Wednesday to Sunday now with it.
Right.
So he turns it into a pretty good weekend, so there's a lot to do there. And then plus when you're in South Florida, you can go visit the cigar companies down there. Most of them are pretty welcoming to come in there.
Right.
If the guys are around. So,
yeah.
All right. Anything else on national launches?
I don't think so.
All right. So before we wrap up, I think we'll talk a little about next week's show real quick. Sokka and Garofalo.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting project because this one, Sokka came to you with this idea.
Yeah. Because we did the media recap for the IPCPR. And, he said he really loves, those types of panel shows and things like that. But he said the thing that we were missing out on is the perspective of, a brand owner, a manufacturer, as well as a retailer. So we wanted to try to do something like that. And we're able to bring that, to this show next week and be able to kind of get And we're not necessarily going to just focus on IPCPR, but we, you know, having those two guys on the show, we can ask them a lot about how the how those two sides kind of interact with each other and the challenges they face and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, I'm IQE, and Saka was joking around. He said, "If this bombs, it's my fault." No, we bought into it. I think it's a really good, and we've been trying to do more panel shows, Aaron and I, and you know, Bear too. And if this works, you know, we could certainly combine, make other combinations to see what happens. Because I think you and I are both agreeing we want to do more of these panel shows. It's something we've been talking about doing. Yeah. So I'm kind of looking forward to it. We haven't had Dave on the show either. So I think that will be very interesting. I mean, I've interviewed Dave before on Stogie Geeks, and it was a lot of fun. He's a really good interview.
Yeah.
He was very great. We're going to start that show a half hour earlier. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start at 9:30 because I envision it probably will go longer. And both those guys have, Dave was okay with it, but Saka has an early start the next morning too.
Right. Yep.
But for Saka, I could tell you that he sleeps less than me, I think. So I don't think that's going to make a difference.
Right. But
yeah. So we'll start that at 9:30 next week. And I'm pretty pumped on that.
Yep.
And, yeah. Anyway, anything else we have?
I would just say for everybody, check out the formula that we did last night. It's available on our site, developmentpalace.com. It's still up on the front page. Or you can hit our YouTube channel, or you could download it as a podcast through you know, iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean. So we had a chance to talk with Klaus Kellner from Davidoff. We focused on the Chef's Edition 2018. We really focused on the blend of that cigar, as well as talking about just tobacco in general and blending and, you know, crops and all those types of things. So if you're interested in that, you know, the really technical knowledge around cigars and tobacco, I definitely recommend that you check it out.
Yeah. Klaus, you know, when I went down to DR with Bear earlier this year, Klaus was really our host. He has an extensive knowledge of tobacco. Okay. So let me tell you, he's probably gonna be the face of Davidoff, probably, maybe not running Davidoff, but he'll be that face, I think, for the next 20 years is what I envision. In that show, there was a point where you guys, like, what Klaus was like, you guys were hitting him with some tough questions. Okay.
Right.
So this is not, you're not going to just talk about rapper mind. That's why I was like, I was glued to the show last night.
Right.
It was it was just refreshing to see it. Because like I said, you guys, it was a tremendous show. So,
Thank you.
Check it out. So, you know, we're doing here, this is the industry piece, but I kind of think that this piece was very much needed. Hopefully you could do it more than once a month, but like you said, it's not gonna be easy. You got to get the right guests to make that show work too.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not just, we can't just have a brand owner talking about, you know, the blend that was made at X Factory and things like that. It's just, that wouldn't be, I don't want to embarrass anybody, you know, asking them questions about stuff that they don't know, and I don't want them to try to BS their way through it either. So, you know, we have a kind of a target list of who we want to have on the show and things like that. And it's also limited just based on, you know, languages. So, you know, some people speak Spanish only, and that wouldn't be a good show for us because we don't speak Spanish. And I think going through an interpreter there'd be a lot lost in there. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, it was good. And like I said, it was pretty good hearing about the Chef's Edition 2018 too. So, you know, it's definitely, I love the original Chef's Edition.
Mm-hmm.
There was a stealth one that came out though that was not too good though.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was, but there was like a 17. Now there was a 17, but it was actually the 16, but there was also a stealth release, I found out.
Okay.
Which we won't go there.
Right.
It sounds like the 18 was really good. So
yeah, it's a strong cigar. I mean, kind of put June down. So he recovered okay after the show, but it definitely was hitting him on the
for
show.
For Davidoff?
it's a strong cigar, man.
Okay. Well, the 16 was definitely a stronger Davidoff. I'll give you that.
Yeah, this is beyond that.
Okay.
It's not if you like that typical Davidoff kind of a lighter thing, this is not it. This is a big departure from a lot of their other stuff.
Okay. And so you guys are going to be reviewing it on Developing Palettes, I see.
We will do a formal review, yeah.
Okay, that would be cool. Yep, so I won't ask you the score yet, but no, it'll be cool.
Yep.
All right. Anyway, that's going to wrap up episode 67 of the primetime show for this Thursday, September 20th, 2018. We'll see everybody next week.
See you guys.